money is more than we're accepting. Anything that's going to be around the investment is a problem, if you know. There's a health education plan in our culture for representing Randy Story, representative Mike Crock, representative Ron Tom, representative Carol Hopkins, representative Crock is excused. I believe representative Lopeski will be joining us on the front, and myself, culture representative Harry Duffer. We want to conduct business. Before we begin, I'd like to remind everyone to please sound their cell phones. Today, our Board Secretary is Matthew Russell, and Alex Gibson is our support. Thank you both. This morning we will be taking up two bills. First, Representative Turner has Bill 173, Clean Climate and Effectiveness, which we first heard in this committee on May 7th of 2021, followed by a first hearing of the government's House Bill 305, Ramparts along the Mount Pontiac District. But first, we need to adopt a committee substitute for House Bill 173. A substitute was previously provided as part of your hearing materials and has also been provided at your desks this morning. I move to adopt the proposed committee substitute for House Bill 173, LF-32-LF-0727-G as a working document. There being no objection, it is so ordered.
Thank you so much for that morning to committee members for the opportunity to present House Bill 173 and its early. And when we were discussing the community plan for this morning, it's kind of like a refresher since it's been a while since we heard the panel. And then we'll talk about some changes there. So I'm not planning to do the PowerPoint again, but a couple of our foundational things in terms of this proposal. I myself have been educated for more than 2 decades in my being in the legislature. I was really interested in policies around education, but what I learned quickly is what we've done over and over again prior to joining the legislature was pass bills that really amounted to unfunded mandates, and that was putting a lot of pressure on districts because, of course, these new policies needed to be implemented. And so, I became very committed to the idea that, we were going to work on something, we had to really do it the right way and make sure that there was a lot of buy-in so that from the action from the educators and the administration folks who would, test with implementing this new policy, would be very supportive rather than, feeling like it had been pushed upon them. So when I first started to learn about the restorative practices and the alternative discipline policies, it was because I attended a Council on State Government workshop on the 12th school to prison pipeline. And unfortunately, now we have a whole body kind of research that tells us that some of the discipline policies that we're using in our Illinois schools is setting these kids up to be in the criminal justice and then adult criminal justice and prison system. Of course, we know that's very costly. And, we don't want to affect the outcomes, and we know that, majority of individuals who are incarcerated will be returned back to the community. And so, I became very interested in knowing, is this a problem in Alaska? What's happening? So, we started doing research and learned this. There were some concerns, and in your packets, there's some interesting news articles that talk about suspension and expulsion rates. And then, it turned out that a colleague of mine, was actually working on these kind of policies in another state. And so I was able to revisit it and start learning what does it look like when you try to do things a little bit differently. And so what I learned through that process is, what you see in front of you, school climate, school connectedness, foundational to reducing some of these behavioral infections is making sure you have a welcoming school environment for all students. And so, that's the first step. And then you build on that, and you'll see in the legislation, if you look at page 3, there are the items that can be included in the plans that they're going to develop. These are kind of years ago, doing a really, really big and running out of support from folks who would do this work, started hosting our Story of Justice Summit last December, we hosted our sixth summit. And so we work with now at least 600 educators from across the state, from communities big and small, and they provide the input for this legislation. And really, it was, you know, kind of working through that process to a place where people got really comfortable. Now, I'm sure, you know, I'm on this committee, but I can follow what you're doing in the committee announcements. So, you know, I know that you've got presentations on this, and I know that Representative Hopkins does the same thing with Marshall Warren Bill. You know, these are concepts you're familiar with that both the programs and part of the Alaska Education Challenge, where you're targeting informed education and some of these many issues of discipline were discussed. So, you know, it's not like we're introducing concepts or anything that are entirely new. And it's more, you know, kind of taking those ideas and trying to implement them in a comprehensive way so that we look at each district and what they're doing and how we might improve it with those tools. With interesting, a couple of experiences, and we'll pass this out during your committee meeting. This fall, on October 6th, there was an article on understanding the Anchorage schools the rise of physical altercations and behavior issues. And about how, you know, kids coming back to school, there were just, you know, a lot of outbursts and things. But what was interesting is right around when this article came out, we had one of my community council meetings, and I was talking about the upcoming historic justice summit and, you know, the themes around this and the concepts. And I just so happened one of the principals from a grade school, their Burlington Elementary, was on the call. And that very next day, they were going to be doing a training with staff. And, you know, when you do this historic activism, there was a lot of questions. This is also in your packet that you use. But it was so interesting. He reported to our community council, you know, they were experiencing these behavior problems that were being reported in the other schools. And they were really, you know, committed to the process in terms of doing these, you know, other interventions that you could do to address the behavioral issues. But so it just was so interesting that, you know, kind of like the proof right there. And that was maybe a substantially bad. You know, we're all focused on improving student outcomes and academic performance. And that's another reason, and really kind of among the most important reasons for consideration here, because this was not research and these things should be interpreted. That shows, you know, how using these kind of policies does improve student outcome. Number one, because if you reduce the amount of time, and I'm sure Representative Crawford knows this too as a teacher, for particular, it takes the time of students out of school, that's more time than learning. Right, so the less we are excluded from the learning environment and from, you know, the opportunities, then, you know, the more likely it is they'll, you know, stay on task and be able to stay ahead. Now, since we met last night, we tried to be very collaborative, and we'll hear from ASB tomorrow's about a testimony. Things that have changed and even more duties changing. Recommendations that came from other stakeholder groups and, you know, the communities of people we've built over the years, the hundreds and hundreds of people across the state that are interested in this topic. So, if we can have him just go through some of the things that are different from the last version in the complete substitute.
For our defense, I'm going to start short of time. So I'm going to go into the explanation of changes, and I guess for that's the one big change in the track, which is let's get to that point. So we have a lot of feedback from educators and various stakeholders that are working changes, and some of the changes are in this discipline mode of our packet. So in this ELS, it changes for section 3. The NBA, which is the membership of the school climate and the school climate improvement committee. There are a couple of changes, so we'll eventually will one of the changes will be the more current groups implied that additional are not required to be more current, so it's for removal for clarity. And then changes to the membership here, but there are a couple of different constituencies that study benefit of them that include. So we have school principals that are included. School board members, student representatives, and then also representatives of all student organizations, and then that's the fact of the rule. And then also we changed the grade levels for teachers on this committee. item from K through 12 through pre-elementary through college. And that kind of drills me early when I think these don't get to this one before. In section 4, there's section 4 C and a new subsection 6. So every question here has been answered in case I'm looking back. In section 3, there's a new subsection G that allows for this committee to consult with a nonprofit organization in a healthy way, so that there's no fiscal impact, but this consultant would be working with the committee to go to work. And so we move on to section 4C. So there's a new subsection 6, and it is another guidance for these different plans to improve guidance for connectedness. And in addition to everything else, there's also nothing more in common from practices, this plan would also include the use of culturally relevant practices adopted to the COVID district. So it encompasses the culturally relevant education piece. And then it's not just factors and then we just want to get to be currently issued. And so we move on with this. And those are the changes in the group, we have six.
And then, there's the idea in terms of how this work will be accomplished is through the committee of these individuals who are willing to contribute their time and volunteer capacity of these professionals. They, you know, with self-organized, it's not very prescriptive about this to happen, but if you large enough group that among the 52 school districts across the state, you know, they can be broken down into smaller subgroups. And so they can work with those districts. And it's also a perspective in the sense that it needs to be a volume, a major bench volume. We've done this through sort of test summits for our implementation up to you guys as you can do. So it's not as if the report has to, you know, you have to think about it like it's this massive report. It's more like an inventory of resources and capacity at that time so that, you know, if we wanted to, all of these things are still implemented. For example, you know, with the social emotional learning component that you're looking at, right? You know, we know a lot of that happens, but if we want to know something that's uniformly happening across the state for all students, right, then, you know, this is the planning step of achieving that. And so that would also identify what resources would be necessary to then implement it. So it's an in between step rather than just saying you must do this, it's the same. You know, if we asked you to do this, what would you need, you know, to accomplish this? What resources do you already have in your community or in your district? And, for example, we know, and you know this better than me, with more budget reductions, a lot of schools have had to cut back on counselors and, you know, social workers and some of those. So, you know, that might be a component of achieving that, you know, each of the districts says, hey, you know, we need to employ a social worker and have, you know, that resource available to help with these kind of interventions. And so, you know, that's, you know, we don't really have funding here. The idea is, you know, so what is creating a plan to identify, you know, kind of what we have and what you need to achieve it and how you can do it, and that way you can be very specific and, you know, to the district. And then step two would be, you know, considering our future time if, you know, if people feel like this is really what we want to do. And again, a lot of this is already happening. It's just sort of packaging it and putting it forward. Thank you so much.
Any questions for Representative Hopkins?
Thank you. Thank you, Representative, for bringing forward an equipment for our co-founders. That would be something that is planning to move in a major player over to the government.
And so I have that in there to hopefully cover have specific needs of English language learners who may have technical education, special education, student records, and other subject matter that community considers necessary.
Important things.
the story, and I appreciate you bringing that up. I would think it would include outreach to all of the superintendents and through the professional certification organizations, and then you representatives, like those are all folks who've kept in touch with. In fact, the first hearing we came out is Tom Kramer and from NEA and Alaska Education Association, Anchorage Bonding Education Association, was one of our invited testifiers. And, showed the support of the legislation. So, they're interested, taking advantage of collaboration. And I'm glad you bring it up because we would want to be thoughtful about that. And I think there's a number of ways that announcements could happen. And even the outreach could happen to different groups. And I think it's just a matter of being committed to, just putting in the effort to make sure it would be spread far and wide. The representation. I think about the most recent task forces created by the governor, and I know there are public members on those, and if I recall, he sent out a press release and announced that that opportunity was available, and I had the link to apply, and, hopefully there's several rural communities. That's the kind of thing we might get in their local newspaper, like the known budget, or the governor, or, there's but I appreciate you bringing that up to give the opportunity to just say, it would be really important to have a thoughtful process that ensured, that the reach was far and wide and that that opportunity was made available to many, many people. Yes, because, as we discussed this with educators through the summits, the model that people preferred and reflected on it was, this two-step process that, not any new sort of like mandates or change in policy without accompanying resources. So step one, create a plan, and then step two, would be, if there's interest in implementing, these recommendations, staff. When I was able to visit the school district that the social worker colleague of mine was working in, and sat down and said, what does it look like to try and do some of these things? And particularly on the tiered approach to discipline, after you have to have the resources, so it's got to be, someone who can physically be in that space to work through a process. It might be a little bit delayed and require a little more time investment. I would say that it's been really exciting. You've seen this too in terms of the monitor school visits and things over the years, is as people have been learning more about this, particularly in the trauma-informed education piece, in our area, and I've seen it in other schools, they're independently adopting some of these different practices. So even in the article I mentioned in October, it talks about there were 601 suspensions, disciplinary actions like maybe issuing interventions are listed. Well, now, they're trying to teach emotional regulation and, better manage self-management. And so some of the schools kind of like the idea of going time out, but instead of it as a punitive or punishment, more self-regulation time out where, a student can recognize that they're, It sounds like you're recognizing that it takes place in the schools, and resources you have, and are there areas where you want to improve that, and, you know, get it better, meet these things. And that's why it's not very prescriptive in the language, because our districts are big and small, some multi-school districts to, you know, we have 60-some schools in Anchorage. It's just that the more examples you have, I think, would make it hard to say, you will do it in this way, X, Y, Z, exactly like this. You know, this gives some flexibility to limit the districts to sort of do it in the way that represents what they have, you know, capacity-wise. And again, that way it doesn't, you know, the expectation isn't that it's, you know, simply when you have to hire people who come out and, you know, do research and have a contract or something, you know. You know, the role of the committee is supposed to be much more sort of supportive and, you know, kind of help them through that process. You know, hopefully, you know, the district will need to have someone who can participate in that process. But again, without being very prescriptive, the committee isn't open to what the time commitment expectation would be for the person in their role.
Basically, again, moving to 924, I think the field designated district representation to coordinate with the committee and drive the district's plan. So it's really a requirement that that's informed by trying to do with our district and the state. Though I think that's important from this committee, and that the intention is for districts to let the committee really help individual efforts of what is happening in their school around climate, because I certainly believe all districts have things happening around school climate, as well as really a broader approach to providing support. And then my last follow-up question in the series is, how does what kind of students might you have is beyond how to maybe good coordination organizations, districts, communities, we have to get back individual districts that their own single thing. And maybe you have some to offer up.
Yes, I agree with the first point you were making, and then on the second point, in terms of what is required of the district in terms of participation. I was trying to make any point on that section that you brought up in terms of the district representatives. Yeah, I mean, again, that could be very specific to, you know, what's available. And, you know, we, for example, in the second and third year of the restorative justice unit, so we partnered with a virtual district, and one year they had all of their principals come through and participate in that. And if you look at the Anchorage School District priorities for this year, these virtual trauma-informed mental health moments are actually on the district priorities. So, you know, it's, you know, sort of substantiating in that way. I think we do have a lot of support from the Northlake Borough, for example, and from their school district. So, you know, we have not reached out to every single district in a way to kind of, you know, seek that support. But in working with so many districts, and just to kind of get it on the record, the folks we've attended also have to include, you know, Fairbanks, Anchorage, Kingdom Roosters, Mecca, Palmer, Valdez, Nursing Borough, you know, we've had folks from TDAC, we've had folks from Taskview, we've had folks from Bethel. It's been good, you know, because for me it's also a learning opportunity that I get to interact with those professionals and then tell me, say, you know, have you considered this, have you considered that, and, you know, how we can make sure that it works out through the diversity of voices.
And I guess that would just follow up. I'll see that on page 4 on the policy measure is on January 2024, which seems realistic to me since it won't take
the co-chair of our own story. Yes, and I actually thought about that being a place where you can have some flexibility too in terms of how the district are progressing on that. If they're able to, you know, I thought, should we put in a report back date, because that would give you the opportunity to
Let's make sure it works for the district. And really, because the district's budget is not, I think,
as far as that could be accomplished in that way. Like, you know, do a couple of interviews, you know, have, you know, basically, like, the set questions you're going to answer, and, you know, put together a plan that way. In secret, you might need a little more of coordination or commitment, but there are people already working in this area, social emotional learning and discipline. So, you know, again, hopefully they can, you know, contribute in a way. But we very much need to be that perspective so that there's that flexibility, knowing that, you know, resources are limited. And so hopefully, I think the committee helps support that.
Partnership, they're really important relationships and help, you know, with kind of future of which is like to search out. Is that my understanding of kind of the process correctly?
Yes, Representative Proctor, the chair, if you look at page 498, plan submission, the order before January 2024, the district supports the plan of the Commissioner of Education and then to the Senate Secretary, the Chief Clerk, so that we would, you know, get the notification that the plans are available. And again, then, you know, folks in a position to consider those recommendations at that time could have a conversation about what it would take to implement that. And we very well may find that some districts may, you know, we think we're covered. You know, we're covered on the basis here because we do X, Y, and Z, and we've got these resources in place. And so, you know, we're kind of doing what we need. But, you know, in areas where we say they're not, or we want to do more, we'll think about that.
Okay. Have you gotten feedback from the Department of Education and some of the other school districts as far as ability to participate in or developing the plan and implementation thereof? I'm concerned primarily about, you know, some of the larger school districts. It seemed a little bit difficult for them to participate.
Sure, Representative Cross, yes, because we've been working on this over the last few years when we had that community gathering, and that community gathering, you know, this year we had about 100 people signed up. Last year we had about 100 people signed up because they were both virtual. The year before that, when we started talking about implementation, probably closer to 50 or so people. But what's been great about those summits, in fact, you know, in the last couple of years where we've been more focused on these ideas and thinking, you know, are we ready to kind of think about policy? We had folks from the Sand Point School District, you know, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, Sitka, like you say, all those, you know, so many of the district that I need. So, you know, in terms of looking at this, yes, we had eyes from across the state. And really, that's why you see this two-step process here, where the first step is creating the plan, and again, with maximal flexibility of what that plan looks like and what it means for, you know, the district to have a representative, you know, time countywide. And then step two, you know, will come later when you have a plan to look at and consider the resources necessary. And then specifically, because we don't want to, again, just change the policy and say, okay, you know, district. For example, the seclusion restraint policy is a really good example of this. It's really good what we do for behavioral interventions. We learned that in some districts, they're really invested in physical space we have. And, you know, kids, and I think we would argue this is not the best practice for, you know, in some cases, the closet, for example, is being used as like the discipline space. So then we've got to be able to finish and say, that's not acceptable. And this was the year before I joined the legislature. But, you know, that might for some of us all get to sit in a dinner to do that. And it was very helpful for me to, like, pick through each step of this was they had to physically build a space in their school, you know, that could be kind of an appropriate space for that. And maybe it was 20,000, maybe 30,000, maybe 60,000, but for the smaller districts, that was 20 or 30 or 50,000 dollars they literally did not have. And so they told me, you know, it may be easy in our minds to think of a change in policy, but, you know, what does that mean in terms of implementation? And so the goal here really is to get a two-step approach so that we avoid, you know, putting any pressure on the district in that way. And really have an understanding of, like, here's what we need to, you know, change this or do better with that or implement something we're not already doing.
Seeing no further questions, I actually have an observation. The school climate and school connected to the school climate committee does not appear to have, you have not said that this committee shall produce some kind of a plan or a report. If I'm reading this correctly, it seems to me districts themselves, each of our 54 school districts, that shows in the plan. And by the time this passes and takes effect, we're only talking about 18 months, not 2 years. So we may be 2 years, almost 2 years out here in March, but there's not that much time in the long term. So how do you envision the committee operating in its initial phases in order to support school districts who are ultimately going to produce their individual district-level plans by January of 2024? On page 2.5, it says it establishes an advisory committee. So the idea here is that, the plan is big enough for people to represent themselves into smaller groups, and then, our group has, these 4 or 5 districts we're going to work with. And so, we have, there'd be some standardized sort of input, output, if you will, in terms of, questions to answer and things to look at, and, big items here. And then what we use them and items that are totally expected to be. But again, the district and social media followers might write a few paragraphs or they might write 5 pages. And so the idea with the folks on the committee here is, to serve in that supportive role for the folks in the district and, help kind of coordinate whatever work is necessary and figure out who needs to be talked to. Minimize the impact and commitment from the district. And then, that supporting role would help them complete their plan so that the district, would ultimately support, be the ones submitting the plan. And I think that has to do more with thinking about, ownership of what comes out of that and making sure that, if you're receiving it from the district, that means, some group of people, from there who really felt comfortable and it wasn't anybody else speaking on their behalf. So, really trying to restrict it to the advisory and supportive role. And to your other point, I do think we should consider that and possibly move it out of here because being realistic, if I am, very optimistic and we get this passage through, and then, to represent a story's point about making sure you do good outreach so that, you provide that opportunity for people to practice staying, maybe that takes a few months and then you get started. So, we probably should push it out of here in terms of the submission to reflect that, but to Representative Gillum, still the idea of appealing it. Just, maybe if you learn what we have 2 years, maybe just making sure you actually do that relative to when the positional pathway get put in. This has been, about 4 years ago now. We've been working on adopting a trauma-informed policy for the state of Alaska to inform education and healthcare policy. What ended up happening is that language got put into the bill at the end of the session where people got combined. And so the language ended up getting put into the Department of Health and Social Services statute. But the intention was it would also go into the education section. So that goes into that subsection, section 143.115. It's all the things that are part of the role of the Department of Education in terms of developing education policy. So that goes into here. That is kind of a pivot, if you will, because previously when we passed that by today, we did another bill. Exactly. We thought that's what we had achieved when we passed that other legislation, but then learned afterwards that we didn't quite agree that because it got put into one department, but not both of them.
Keeping that early development piece front
because it is critical to educate our kids. And this subsection in section 2, acknowledges that and makes it part, permanent part of education policy. So we appreciate that. So that's the piece that is not being reviewed. And the ground culture of networks and again, what I think is really important is that having this allows for some prevention work to be accomplished around that because it makes it part of a policy directive. And so what we've seen in the Department of Health and Social Services is that language has actually opened up access to some different federal funding, and where I think it's been most beneficial is in the area of our foster care system, because we know we really want to be on the prevention side for that and the earlier intervention. So, you know, that possibility may exist with that too, because it just sort of, you know, makes that statement that a lot of people work on. Thank you both. We will now move on to invited testimony. Mark Wooten has been meeting in Houston at 7:55 a.m. Mark, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear
you. I'm going to put your candles on the record. Are you really in Texas?
I am in Texas, yes. I'm
just
back here trying to speak to the weather.
I don't blame you. Go ahead, Mark. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
I need to bring new people in to learn about what that's been done. But do you feel that is, or how would you advise the committee members to be appointed?
Thank you.
thank you, Katie, for your testimony. I really appreciate your commitment to the kids in general. In light of your personal experiences around abuse, is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close public testimony. At this time, I'm going to set an amendment deadline for House Bill 173 at Thursday, March 10th, and then please have any amendments drafted by legal services and email to house.education@akalabs.gov, and I'm going to move this bill for further consideration. Thank you both for appearing this morning.
So, first off, can you move to a great question? That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm going to take it back as well. We transition here.
Ms. Teschner, you know the drill. Name an affiliation and name a presentation on this drill.
And thank you for this opportunity to present the governor's library and park school bill, House Bill 335. It's an act providing that Rampart Schools will be in the unique non-contact school districts to measure our situations in this area. So, the Rampart School is currently part of the UConn Flat School District, so it is part of its within their school boundaries. However, by mutual agreement, through a memorandum of agreement, the UConn Contact School District has administered and operated the Rampart School. So, that's fiscal year 2017, so we're currently the sixth year in that memorandum of agreement. Back in fiscal year, or back in April 2019, both the Commissioner of the Department of Education and Development and the Commissioner of the Department of Commerce and Community Economic Development signed a decisional memorandum that effectively terminated Rampart to operate under the Utah Electric School Board. However, despite Rampart School functioning as part of the Utah Electric School District, residents within the school district's boundary for Rampart discovered that they still could not vote to the Utah Electric School Board. And because the agreement did not and could not authorize the modification of the school district's actual boundaries. The regional educational attendance areas are part of the Anomalous Borough. And pursuant to Article 10, Section 6 of the Alaska Constitution, the legislature serves as the assembly for the unorganized borough. Furthermore, school district boundaries cannot be changed by administrative agreement rather than by legislative action. This is pursuant to Alaska Statute 21.03.020, which states that allowing for maximum local participation, the legislature may establish spoken or ballot source areas within the Anomalous Borough to provide special services that may include schools. So House Bill 375 allows for that maximum local participation within the local Utah School Board, and the legislature is the appropriate entity to authorize allowing the Rampart School to become part of the Utah Quantic School District. The community of Rampart is culturally and historically aligned with the communities of the Utah Quantic School District, but both school initiatives support placing Rampart within the Utah Quantic School District. The passage of House Bill 335 would result in a boundary change between the two regional education attendance areas that would allow parents to serve in the Rampart School and within the Rampart community to participate in school board elections applicable to their community school. Thank you for this opportunity then to present the governor's bill on the Rampart School and the general education committee this morning. The general representatives from both the Quantic School District, that is Superintendent Gary Boyd, and the Quantic School District President, School President Gary Thomas, are allowed to help speak to the specifics of both of their communities and districts. Before we go to that, I would like to take questions and go through the question analysis if you wish.
Right, if you have any questions, I'm going to go to the introduction to Mr. Bennett. Any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Teschner. I don't have a question to answer that. I've thought about this for a while now. Even before I was elected, and some of these there's so many little things that are in this book. I'll be up to you for working on things. So I'm really thrilled that the governor
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
One of the main reasons for the permanent boundary change will allow the residents of
congressional board of elections. The Division of Elections can use an MOA to recognize the military parking broadcasting elections. In addition to administering and managing the school's operation, Nuclear Quadcock would like to maintain record facilities and buildings. As it was mentioned previously, it was closed for many years. The school needs more updating facilities as improvement. And a permanent boundary change for the district to help clear up any property, any ownership, or other questions. Annual approvals of the agreement back, and it can extend hours of time, many board meetings, department time, regular time. And we have worked since 2008 with our local legislators. We've worked with the executive branch department and agencies, and we've asked how to make these boundaries change. And we thought we found a solution. On October 11, 2018, the commissioners of DCCAD indeed signed a decision memorandum to recognize a permanent school district boundary change for Grant Park being committed to MKSD. However, on August of 2019, the director of the Division of Elections sent us a letter saying that they did not recognize the decisional memorandum. The reason was that the Department of Law felt that the commissioner's decisional memorandum did not have the force of law. On September 10, 2019, the local boundary commission staff wrote to inform all school districts that the decisional memorandum no longer existed. And over the past year, we've been back and forth with the Department of Law and had to proceed to accomplish the permanent school district boundary change for Grant Park. There's been, as I said earlier, no opposition that we're aware of. We've publicly posted notices for years. We've had school board meetings, town hall meetings, which brings us here today to support the passage of House Bill 335. And we need a permanent resolution for Grant Park to be included. The state of Alaska also needs a permanent resolution to this issue, and it's for our district, the MLA approach is not going to continue working for a long-term solution, as it's been since 2017. We want to make it fair for students and our community, and we know that you've been working properly bills and initiatives to improve education across Alaska. We appreciate your public service. I enjoyed the last session listening to that. And we want to express our appreciation to Governor Dunlap and his team for sponsoring this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Superintendent Boyd. Really appreciate your clarification. Question. Number one, if you would please email your testimony to house.education@aklynch.gov. House.education@aklynch.gov. It's a lot of important details and dates in there that I see you've included the memorandum of agreement that you've been operating under. I'm curious about you said that the Rand Park School was closed for a while due to lack of population of lack of students. And during that time, did they have representation on the UConn School District Board? And do they continue to have a representation on the UConn Board?
Thank you for that question. I'm that was directed to me. At that time, they didn't have representation from their current school district. They were able to vote for UConn Flats school board members. However, it's primarily other than this document, that this permanent boundary change that we're asking for, Rampart has been part of UConn Flats school district for 7 years now. So they've looked to us for representation.
So for all intents and purposes, they've been under your supervision, the superintendent.
Yes.
Okay. And when this change occurs, the school board members, now the school board members elected from the community of Rampart, if I understand the way our AAP boards work.
You are absolutely correct.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any additional questions for Superintendent Boyd? Thank you very much.
appreciate your work and your attention to this issue.
Thank you so much.
Ms. Tasher, I think you said that if there was Larry Thomas, he does not appear to be present. Alex, do we have anybody?
Okay.
All right, seeing none, we will open public text on anyone in the room who wants to testify on this issue. And there's nobody online, so public testimony is open. And closed. Just to do that officially. All right, any further discussion before we send an amendment to law? All right, I don't see that there need to be any amendments made with this. It looks like all parties have decided that this is going to happen. But nonetheless, I'm going to set an amendment deadline for House Bill 335 on Thursday, March 10th at noon to accept the amendments drafted by Legal Services and email to house.education@ava.gov. And I'm going to hold this bill for further consideration. And our next meeting will be on Wednesday, March 11th, where we will hear a presentation on demonstrating teaching, reading, and culture by Joel Asik, Project Coordinator, Tribal Liaison, Department of Education.